Members, I call the meeting of the House Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division to order. We do have a quorum. And we'll begin with the approval of the minutes from the last meeting, which was yesterday, March 20th. Representative Frankie moves adoption of the March 20th minutes as presented. Any additions or corrections to the minutes as presented? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the March 20th, 2017 minutes of the committee, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion passes. Those minutes are adopted. We are going to begin by taking any additional testimony that people might have that they might not have had the opportunity to participate in last evening related to the division report, which is available today as the DE. It's a delete everything amendment to House File 603. First on the list, I have Mr. Kevin Walker. Mr. Walker, are you here? Mr. Walker, welcome. Please introduce yourself and then proceed, sir.
Thank you. Good morning. So I am Kevin Walker, Director of Business Development at North Country Cooperative Foundation, and I wanted to come by to express my appreciation to Representative Jaskowski, the particular help of Steve Hines and Steve Rubis towards inclusion of this bill, HF 661. The purpose of this bill is to basically resolve a renter's credit discrepancy in the current tax code that negatively affects predominantly low-income households in manufactured housing cooperatives throughout Minnesota. It's a client group that we've worked very actively with, and we know that this bill, if enacted, will make a significant difference in their lives. And we'd be happy to take any additional questions related to it.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Questions for Mr. Walker, members? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else who would like to testify about the division report? Okay. With that, the way we're going to proceed with this, members, is the division report, I am told, is a DE amendment to, and it is to House File 603. So House File 603 is before the committee, and we will begin by applying the DE amendment to House File 603 and then apply subsequent amendments to the then amended House File 603. That makes sense for folks? Okay, so with that, the chair would move the A17-0256 amendment to House File 603. Discussion on the amendment. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the delete everything amendment to amend House File Amendment A17-0256 to House File 603, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The delete everything amendment is adopted. So we have before us amended House File 603, from which with which we will continue the markup through the day. Members, the first amendment that I have is an author's amendment, and it is the A22 amendment. Does everybody have a copy? Mr. Clayman, I think, is prepared to talk about the author's amendment, what it contains.
Mr. Chair, members, the author's amendment just provides for some technical and clarifying changes to the delete everything amendment. Line 1.3 changes a plural reference to a singular reference in the effective date of the A containment provision. Line 1.4 inserts omitted language in the Disabled Veterans Homestead Exclusion provision regarding the 8-year limitation on the spousal benefit. Line 1.5 and 1.6 clarifies that the intent of the overvalued property provision is not to allow relitigation of a previously appealed claim, and that clarifies that the intent of that provision is not to allow that. Line 1.7 of the A22 amendment and line 1.9 of the A22 amendment are just language cleanup, essentially rephrasing things for clarity. Line 1.10 corrects an incorrect statutory reference, and line 1.11 and 1.12 are again just some language cleanup.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Klayman. Members, I would move the adoption of the A22 amendment, House File 603, discussion on the author's amendment. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A22 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The A22 amendment is adopted. Next, it's been brought to my attention, members, that in the bill on page 99.23, there's one date change that we need to make. Mr. Carlson, are you here just quickly, if you would? Mr. Carlson, Jay, this time.
I hope so.
If you could just quickly, Mr. Carlson, just outline the issue on 99.23.
Mr. Chairman, members, Joel Carlson, I represent the City of Burnsville, and on page 99 in the division, we adopted a date change on line 99.23 to change that 2016 to 2017, no increments have been collected in 2016, and that's why we made the change. Appreciate your support for this technical correction.
Representative Mark Bart moves that an oral amendment on 99.23 that we strike the date 20 or the year 2016 and insert 2017. Discussion on the oral amendment, members. Hearing none, all in favor of the amendment to oral amendment to strike 2016 on 99.23 and insert 2017, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr.
Amendments adopted. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Okay, the next amendment, members, is the A23 amendment, and this is related to the Met Council. And Mr. Shetnin, are you here to discuss this amendment with us before we move? Mr. Shetnin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetnin. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Met Council. I appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chair, to talk to you about the A23 amendment. These are the Metropolitan Council Regional Transit Bonds. These are our bonds that were included in last year's tax bill. The purpose of these bonds are in order to allow the council to replace our fleet. When I say the council, it's much broader than the council. It is related to the suburban transit providers, it's metro mobility vehicles, it's transit link vehicles, and it is our regular bus system as well. And Mr. Chair, what this does, it allows us to match federal funds that we receive in order to replace that fleet. We also use it in order to build shelters, kind of small capital related things in our transit system. And these bonds, we've received the authority from the legislature since 1989 related to these small capital fixes. They're not general obligation bonds. They're Met Council general obligation bonds. They're not general obligation bonds of the state. But again, what they are generally in the past, they've been carried in the public finance article of the tax bill. We've carried them in the transportation bill in the past. But again, all of these bonds can be used for is fleet replacement or small capital. In the amendment, there is language on line 1.18 to 1.122 to make sure folks realize that this is not being used for the expansion of light rail. This is not going to be used in order to build the Southwest Line or any other type line. It is being, these bonds are used actually just to allow us to replace fleet and make small capital investments.
Thank you, Mr. Shetnin. Mr. Shetnin, Representative Kurtos has a question.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Shetnin. With regard to the federal matching dollars, are there restrictions on the use of those dollars?
Mr. Shetnin.
Mr. Chair, members, the federal dollars that we use to match that we use these funds to match are restricted for fleet. So it is for the bus replacement.
Representative Hertos?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so that is the only use it can be used for.
Mr. Shetland?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertos, that is correct. And then with the other remaining funds that we have, we do small capital replacement. It's for shelter. It's for ADA improvements to, in certain areas. It is not for any type of expansion of our rail system.
Representative Hertos?
It's for the existing system, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
Representative Hertos?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Shetland, for that clarification.
Ms. Schill, you had a clarification.
Mr. Chair and members, just to note, there is a revenue impact for this particular bill. It's Representative Kosnick's, I want to say, 1679. You can find it on the updated spreadsheet that was in your folder this morning on lines 31.5 to 35. Total cost, and this is both property tax refunds interactions and income tax refund interactions, there's a cost in fiscal 19 of $280,000, and then as we go forward in the tails, there's a cost of $2.4 million.
Other questions, members? Let's have the amendment before us. The chair would move adoption of House of the A23 amendment. Discussion? Representative Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for offering this. I'm just wondering, with the insertion on page 35, line 3, just wanted to make sure that was correct because it looks like it puts it in the middle of a section on levy amounts.
Where was that, Representative Joaquin?
It says insert the following on page 35 after line 3 and 1.3 of the amendment. Just wondering if it was just wondering about where it's being inserted. That's
okay,
all.
Maybe staff can help us with that. I think that might be a good catch, Representative Yulkin.
Page 34,
Mr.
I assume.
Mr. Klayman?
Should be on line 34, maybe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Yulkin, I think we'll just need a couple seconds here to find the right page in line for that.
Okay. Any other questions on the amendment? Thank you, Mr. Shen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I really appreciate it.
Mr. Hines has a solution for us here.
Mr. Chair, I think if we, on line, okay. So on line 1.3, instead of page 35, it should be page 135. And then I think that's the only change we need to make.
Okay, Representative Joaquin moves to amend the amendment by on line 1.3 before the numbers 35, inserting the number 1 so that it reads 135. Questions, members? All in favor of the amendment to insert 1 on line 1.3 before the number 35 so it reads 135, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Thank you for that catch, Representative Joaquin.
The amendment to the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment is adopted. That was eagle eyes, Representative Joaquin. Very good. Other discussions on the amended amendment, members? Okay, hearing none, all in favor of adopting the amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment as amended is adopted. Okay. The Representative Lean, Representative Lean moves the adoption of the A3 amendment. Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A3 amendment pertains to an existing TIF district in the city of Moorhead, and what the amendment does is move back the certification date of the district from July 12, 2012 to June 29, 2012. And this is in response to the Great Recession. I know there were a number of TIF districts across the state that, because of the Great Recession, after the certification dates did not see the development action that they otherwise would have. And so there were a couple laws passed in 2009 and 2014 to allow some of these certification dates to change, and so that is what we are seeking to do here. Again, it's just to move back the certification date in a Moorhead TIF district 13 days.
Thank you, Representative Lean. And Representative Lean, I think we had this in the tax bill last time, did we not?
Mr. Chair, actually, this is an issue that just came up this session. The city noticed it, and we quickly got the bill drafted, got it introduced. We unfortunately ran out of time to hear the bill in this committee for a full hearing, but I certainly would appreciate the support from members on the amendment.
Thank you. And Representative Lean, I do support your amendment, and we talked about this, and I'm recalling now that kind of the glitch we ran into. It is a technical thing that we need to fix. Discussion on amendment, members. Okay, hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The A3 is adopted. Okay. The chair has one more amendment, so we can just hang on to that one for now because I think the paperwork is still coming, and that is the Property Taxpayer Empowerment Act / moving the special election dates to November. Oh, they're here. Mr. Rubis is going to be around. So, members, this is a bill that was before us yesterday that we laid over, House File 654. I guess I would ask staff, do we need to include in here where to insert this into the bill? We don't. Okay. So the chair would move the adoption of an amendment to add House File 654 to the bill, and staff tells me they'll have the ability to place it in the right place in the bill. Discussion on the amendment, members. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think was mentioned last night when this was brought up, but in the omnibus election bill that's been moved forward, we're setting up four dates to hold special elections, school bond, whatever, as opposed to having them whenever, but setting four states and statute dates and statute to have that. Now, I think this might conflict with that piece, but that's something to look forward as we look at it, because we go forward, because Like I said, the election bill is coming out of the Government Operations Committee that was passed as the, has set four specific dates in statute to have, to hold these special elections. It might be something you want to look into.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. I think there's a Representative Quam bill.
Yeah, I believe so, too.
Okay. Other questions on the amendment? Ms. Schill has a comment on.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill also has a slight, actually, cost, not cost, cost savings to it. You can find this.
Of course it does, Ms. Schill.
Of course, Mr. Chair. You can find this on the revised spreadsheet. Once again, the one that was put in your packet listed at 10 p.m. last evening. Look at lines 47 through 49. Revenue impact is unknown, but the MDE, that's the Department of Education Administration, anticipates a cost savings of $75,000 in the tails.
Thank you, Michelle. Members, other questions or comments on the amendment? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we had quite some discussion on it yesterday and some testimony about how this would affect cities' levies because it has a look back so that a levy would be frozen from the year before for the year of and then not be on a on the ballot until the year after. So there's a lot of confusion there, which causes some instability in the business climate and the taxpayers within the city and knowing what they're going to be paying and when they're going to be paying it. So there's concern there. I also still have concerns with the language on 13.20 and 13.21 that exempts cities under 500 because I do believe that if we're going to do this, it should include everybody. And then also on lines 14.1 to 14.2, when it does talk about voters equal in number to 10% of the votes cast in the last general election, for cities that are on an odd year instead of an even year, this could be a really, really, really small amount. I think I used the example of Hopkins yesterday where one of our general elections were an odd year city had 879 people out of the 12,000 registered voters, and we have 18,000 citizens. So 87 people could sign a petition to halt the levy process, which is just not very high threshold. So I hope the chair would still consider maybe changing that to the trigger we had in Representative Runbeck's bill instead. And all in all, I still think it's a bad idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin. Other questions, comments, members? Okay, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't want to repeat too much of what Representative Joaquin just mentioned, but you know, I was moved by a lot of testimony from yesterday coming from our cities and our school board with regards to this, some of their concerns, effect on cities' levies. You know, and again, I think what resonates with me most is that we elect our city officials. If they're not doing their job, we vote them out of office. And I think those of us that come from a municipal form of government and being the closest to our constituents, that rings true with me. So I think that's an important factor that gets lost in this particular bill. So you know, not getting into some of the other aspects in terms of the exemption for the small cities, of course, is a concern of mine as well as the low percentage in terms of the referendum. So but would not be in favor of this, and I think there was some other legislation that I think gets more at what is trying to be achieved here.
Thank you. Other questions or comments, members? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the amendment to add House File 654 to the bill, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No. No.
Motion passes, the amendment's adopted.
All right, that's a good start.
There were a lot of silent votes on that. other amendments, members, and I've mentioned members to Representative Loeffler, and I think we mentioned this yesterday. If there are not, if there are amendments still forthcoming, and we are waiting for them to come, we can recess if we need to as well. And so we want to make certain that all the ideas are heard here. Representative Nelson,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A18 amendment. I believe it was. Has it been passed out, or?
Okay,
And while it's passing, I can explain what it does.
Thank you.
So I'll move the A18 amendment, Tom.
Nelson moves the A18 amendment.
And what it does is on page 36, it deletes section 21. And, Mr. Chair, we talked about this last night, but this is the one that gives a real special tax break benefit to one city, mainly one city. I understand there's two other cities that get a little bit of benefit from it, but it's basically the city of Rogers. And while they've been very successful, and I've got to applaud them for the hard work they've done to drive, bringing business to their city, the large number of warehouses that they've put up in the last few years, by giving them this tax break, it just basically, again, large businesses that it will benefit, not small ones. And if we're going to do tax breaks, I would like them to go to small businesses and lower costs, or seniors and homeowners. But the special treatment that we give them, it's probably not necessary. And actually, if this goes through and other things that are in here go through for commercial industrial properties, they're going to get a double benefit and a double tax cut that, you know, they should be contributing to the state and to the city's finances also. Also, if we do this moving forward, this is setting a huge precedent that was talked about last night that has not been done before, and I can see other cities coming forward with this and with special reasons and asking for these same special tax breaks or similar tax breaks that pretty soon they're going to have this hodgepodge of taxes around the state and just going to add to the complexity of our tax system. And that's one thing that we always hear complaints about is how complex our tax system is, that we should just simplify it. And this just goes the opposite direction, making our tax system more complex. And so I move the A18 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Other comments on A18? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what Representative Nelson is referring to is the double dip on getting a break is because, if I remember right, from the funding mechanism on there, it's equal to what they'd pay in the state general levy. And then if they also got the break, if we pass this bill and CI property is frozen at the levy and then the inflator's taken off, they'd be getting a break there too. But maybe Mr. Hines can explain the funding mechanism or how we arrive at $750,000 a year this City of Rogers would be getting back.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin, the funding mechanism in that section 21 is that the amount that the City of Rogers contributes to fiscal disparities in excess of 8% of its tax capacity, it basically caps their contribution at 8% of the tax capacity. So mechanically, it doesn't affect fiscal disparities. So the rest that they put into fiscal disparities, they get to basically keep their state general levy. So it really does, it comes out of the state's pocket, so to speak. So it allows them to keep, but it doesn't benefit the CI properties per se in Rogers. It benefits the city. It really caps their contribution at 8%.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. And could you remind me again what the amount is every year?
Mr. Hines.
It's approximately $740,000 per year.
Other questions, members? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not saying that cities on the fringe don't have issues that need to be addressed, but to do it one or two cities at a time, through the state levy, I think we could find better mechanisms to get people with communities with similar problems working together to develop some solutions. But I think using the state levy in this way is not a good precedent for us to establish at this point. And if we do, I think we're going to end up with a major share of the 855 cities trying to figure out how to make themselves seem uniquely needy. And maybe that's not a road we want to go down.
Maybe we'll create more reasons why we need to repeal the entire state levy. I thought I'd get a chuckle at it. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, my recollection of the issues, and this has been before the Property Tax Committee for several years, but it basically is centered around a disparate amount of tax that's being paid under fiscal disparities, unlike most communities in the metro region. And so what it was seeking to do was to cap it at what is kind of the average and not be outsourcing all of their tax capacity to other areas. So there are other communities that do benefit from this. This is the most glaring one in terms of the larger amount, but it's not unique just to the city of Rogers only, and I would support the inclusion of this in the bill.
Representative Yelkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hertas brings up a good point. I think we really do need to look at the formula for fiscal disparities. It hasn't been looked at for a while, and maybe that's a better way to approach this and to start carving out one or two cities at a time. Thank you.
Other questions or comments, members? Members, I would encourage a no vote on this amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the A18 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion fails. The A18 is not adopted. Okay. Other amendments, members? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should have passed this out real quick. I have an amendment here. And it basically, if you turn to page 110, it deletes section 1. Let everybody get to it before as the amendment is being passed out. And this is a bill that we actually heard for the first time in government operations, because at the essence of this bill really is about taking away local government control, taking away the ability for cities to decide amongst themselves on whether or not they want to put a ban or a tax or a fee. And this actually takes out the ban language, because it really just shows that it doesn't belong in this report or in this committee, on plastic bags or paper bags in their communities. I brought up in both this committee and the Government Operations Committee, and I didn't want to kill more trees and make copies for you again, but the City of St. Louis Park spent 22 months looking at this issue with their citizens, with their business owners, with their city councils, and held countless meetings and decided not to put a ban or a tax or fee on plastic bags. And really, that's the essence of democracy within each of these cities, to be able to sit and talk about this and figure it out for themselves. And not only does this bill ban a current city from doing this, it also can be retroactive. Bans have been thought of and not put into place, like the Minneapolis ban right now is going to take place July 1st. This makes this retroactive to May 31st, so that ban couldn't take place, and there's been a lot of work done with that. Especially, we heard testimony on that actually the fee that they're charging the stores is actually staying with the grocery stores. It's not even going to the cities. So every city is unique. This is a local control issue. It should stay a local control issue, and putting it in this bill in a tax property tax division report just seems a little odd as well. So just wanted to pitch it. And I think you all have the amendment now. Just tap danced as long as I could. So I look forward to the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I take a look at this provision in the bill, I don't see anything forbidding a business from not using plastic bags. We talk about local control. Well, even more local than a city would be the actual business itself.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Other questions, Representative Lunan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lunan, talking about local control. That's why I don't think it belongs in the division report. This is something that we've discussed in government operations and elections. The only reason it was brought here is because it actually prohibited the city from either putting a tax or a ban on plastic, paper, or reusable bags. And reusable bags can also be taxed when they're sold, and that's a local option sales tax. It would have prohibited the local option sales tax, but the language here is, I don't know, no, we didn't add that fix to that, so there's still a little question on the streamlining, but I just don't think it belongs in this division report. This is something, like I said, our city spent 22 months looking at this, working with the stakeholders, taking testimony at the local level where this belongs, and decided not to do it. So I think that's where those discussions need to take place. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, I'll just point out that the ban, the prohibition on bans, I don't believe, is in the bill. I think that's in the Environment Committee if it does exist. But we've got the prohibition on taxes around bags in the bill, and I think that's what the amendment would delete. Other questions, comments, members? And likewise, the chair would also recommend a no vote on this amendment. Questions, comments before we vote? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The motion does not prevail, and the A4 is not adopted. Any other amendments, members? Representative Loeffler?
Mr. Chair, I'd be moving the A16 amendment. Since we've just got done talking about sort of local authority, and we've spent, and I'm pleased that some things that we discussed are not in the bill, in the division report, and I appreciate that. But it has inspired, I think, a bigger discussion on, you know, what is the role of our aid to local government, both for counties and for cities. And I have always felt that the purpose of that was to assure that people throughout the state, taxpayers throughout the state, can get services from their local government at a reasonable property tax burden, and that we'd have some adjustments for tax capacity because not all communities have the same tax base. And so it equalizes some opportunities. And we don't have in statute a definition of what the role and purpose of these aids are, so I'm trying to fill a blank in our ball. It's coming out. I will just tell you what it says as it comes out. And it says that the purpose of aid that county, home rule, charter, and statutory cities and towns receive under the appropriate sections is to enable the residents and businesses of all communities across the state to support necessary local government services with reasonable property tax levies, regardless of the differences in property wealth. I think that's something that has been a tradition and a use of these, and why we put so much time and effort in this division, no matter who's in charge, attaching to this. It further provides that allocation of aids to local government under these sections must be broadly based on measurable need factors and tax capacity as outlined in these sections. And that's, we spend a lot of time. We've got many adjustments and tweaks to the LGA formula in this bill. And they're all based on objective measures of need and tax capacity. And that, I think, is also good because it means everybody is treated fairly and objectively. The next sentence, I suspect, will generate more discussion, and that is that in no instance should aid to an individual government be adjusted based on specific policy decisions made by the elected officials of that local government. I think it's an important policy statement for us to say that our aid program is really about assuring access to essential services based on objective need factors, and that our anyone's disagreement with a particular policy, no matter what the subject area is, of that policy should be dealt with in different ways, not through a subtraction from either local government aid or county program aid. And then the last part of the amendment deletes the section 17 that's not in conformance with that, and that's the deletion recapture of aid for any local government that contributes to the World's Fair. Because that's an example of us taking LGA out of its historic integrity in terms of a needs-based objective measure formula, and instead putting it in terms of, you know, the subjective lens of whoever is in the majority that wants to address a particular issue. And with that, I'd be glad to respond to questions. But I do think it's a philosophical statement that I think our local governments could get behind, and that really reinforces the traditional partnership that we've had.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Other discussion on the amendment? Representative Lunin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, my question to this amendment is that you have in line 1.9 based on measurable need factors, and yet the state, when we're determining what the need factors of that community are, it would be based on priorities where they're doing spending, that if they're allocating money to situations that the state feels is a poor priority, that becomes a measurable need factor and would negate that that funding. So it just seems like this amendment in itself kind of contradicts itself in those two aspects. That's just the way I look at it.
Thank you. Representative, you want to respond to that?
If I could, Mr. Chair. And also, just to clear up some confusion, apparently three amendments were stapled together. This is only the top one. So we can go through the next ones. I'm not even sure the topics yet, but we can go through those next. I think that the difference, Representative Lunan, is that the need factors are things that the city can't control. And it's the size of their population. It's the number of accidents that are held. It's the number of seniors that are served for counties. I mean, they are objective measures that really are outside of the local government's control, and that's how we measure need. And then tax capacity, of course, is another objective measure. And so this, it says, we should distribute state funding based on objective criteria that are not subject to the political whims of either that local council or the local county commissioners or the legislature, but instead should be distributed based on objective data that measures need, that has been broadly endorsed. Anyone who's been involved in formula development here knows that you know, there's a lot of discussion that goes into which need factors should be measured, but they've always been ones that are beyond the control of the local government. And tax capacity is under our control in terms of setting rates and things like that, but it also is something that is an objective measure. And I think that honors the partnership and the integrity of the program, and it allows local school counties and cities to plan long-term because it provides a stable funding source that they can count on.
Thank you. Representative Lunan?
I'll be brief, Mr. Chairman. But what I read in this is that this would allow a municipality to fail to spend resources on those measurable needs and prioritize something else above it, which would then would what you're saying would leave the responsibility to us. And what I'm saying is that people should take care of their own stuff first and then come to us. We shouldn't be the first stop. That's my point.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. And one last report.
In terms of context, we have a whole bunch of tools for holding local governments accountable for fulfilling their responsibilities, and some work better than others, but we have a lot of mandates in health and human services and corrections, less so in the municipal side, and we have corrective action plans, we have fines, we have all kinds of ways in which we do hold those local officials accountable for what we've said they should do. And I think we should use those alternative tools if we want to give direction to them on particular services, but not the LGA or CPA formula.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, there was just a lot of discussion with Representative Lunan on and around the objective need factors, and if you could define on line 0.17 what reasonable is as it relates to objective need factors, because that doesn't seem objective. It seems more subjective.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that has always been the goal and the aspiration of these programs to have to result in fair or reasonable levy rates by the state contributing more to communities that have a lower tax base and less to those with high tax bases. And our formulas define what is reasonable based on calculations, but so that it does have that end result, that those with low property tax base do get more. But it's a sliding scale as defined in our formulas.
Representative Barr, any other questions or comments, members? And good discussion. And Representative Loeffler, as I look at this, my eyes kind of zoomed in on the same word that Representative Barr did, reasonable and then also measurable need factors. And this, I think, it just kind of realigns or re-presents questions about what is our local government aid for, and what is our county program aid for. And so, I think a lot of people believe that we shouldn't be wasting money and we shouldn't be spending money when it's spent or come about by a local government illegally. And so those, I think, are the two examples that we have in the bill. So I don't know. When the local government lobbyists come before us and we hear from our local mayors and city council members and county commissioners, the discussion is always, well, we need to have more local government aid and more county program aid for police, fire, ambulance. But then we have something in here that says don't spend money to a World's Fair that has gone bankrupt the last time it was held in America. And there's opposition to it. So I think we need to have more discussion about this. I don't know that this is the right amendment, but I think we need to have maybe a more a broader and more inclusive discussion about what is the purpose of each of these and what should we be looking at down the road. Maybe include them in hearings in the future. Those are just my thoughts. Other questions, comments, members? Hurtas. Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess in listening to this discussion, it's interesting. I guess I would, you know, anecdotally ask, what would every town or city in the state of Minnesota be able to do if they had $100 more per capita? If you had a 1,000 population town, they'd have $100,000 more. If you had 2,500, you'd have $250,000 more. Representative Lunan mentioned that, you know, you should take care of it at the local level before coming to the state. And members, that's exactly what the LGA formula does, is it extracts money from every town and community. State general levy extracts money from every town and community that should stay in there. And just on the LGA alone, I mean, with roughly $550 million and 5.5 million people in the state, for every man, woman, and child in the state, that's $100 per capita. So, you know, I just think it would be a whole lot better if we would quit taking money from people and then have everybody come and grovel for who gets what and distribute state funds when the money really comes from the people in the first place. Members of a community should support a spending project and be able to afford to do just that. So it's just an anecdotal comment.
Representative Markworth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. This state would look very different if we didn't have local government aid and county program aid. And especially in some of those cities that we're talking about under 500, you know, you look at those cities and, you know, half or even more of their budget is local government aid. And if you didn't have that, you'd see property taxes really going really, really higher. They have to cut back on services. There's a lot of these communities where they're seeing loss in population. And, you know, what LGA has tried to do in county is to kind of equalize whether or not you're living in Minnetonka or in Bagley or wherever, you're roughly going to get the same level of service at roughly the same cost. Because we know 1% of tax rate in a very wealthy city is going to raise all sorts of revenue, where 1% in another city is going to raise hardly any. So it really would look different. And a lot of our smaller cities, I think, would just really see a quick decline without those dollars. And, you know, and I understand, Mr. Chair, what you're saying. I mean, you wonder sometimes about, you know, some of the spending patterns on things that are spent in various cities. And yet, I do believe that cities are using those dollars for those essential services. I mean, if you look at the budgets for cities, and you can go to the state auditor's website and look at that, most of the expenditures are in law enforcement and streets. I mean, that's pretty much the top two. And those are your very essential ones. So, you know, I don't think we're extracting dollars and, you know, from various folks. I mean, these are dollars that are well spent in our communities, and quite frankly, out in small rural communities without local government aid, those cities would look very different.
Representative Yohe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to echo what Representative Marquardt was saying. Local government aid is meant to set a floor for services that people should expect no matter where they live. That they can flush their toilet, that they can drive on their street that's plowed in the winter, that they can call 911 and have a fire department show up or the police department show up. These are basic services, and actually there's a few towns, smaller towns in greater Minnesota, where 75% of their budget, 75% is local government aid, so that those people living in those towns could have those basic services. So to tie this as a nexus to something like the World's Fair is, I think, what Representative Loeffler is trying to explain, is that to ding a city, and those cities probably aren't going to even use it for that. So local government aid doesn't belong in this discussion with taking that away for certain things that people just don't seem to like. Kind of reminds me of when I was on city council and we'd have somebody randomly come in and say, I don't want you to plow that trail because I don't ever walk on it. But that trail needed to be plowed for many, many more people in town. So it's just kind of those basic services that some people may think, I don't want to pay for that, but I don't use it. But it's that basic line of services folks need that local government aid helps these cities maintain because their tax base isn't where the rest of the tax base is around the state. Thank you.
Representative Hertoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Marquardt's comments. Rep. Marquardt, you and I now have shared this committee for 5 years, and it sure has flown by, but nonetheless, you and I have always kind of locked heads on the LGA, and particularly the prescriptive formula. You know, I'd like to just point out, because I think oftentimes rural legislators think that everything around Lake Minnetonka is just hunky-dory. You know, I don't represent the city of Minnetonka, but I represent property owners around Lake Minnetonka. But many of my cities, Minnetrista has no downtown, has no business district. Independence, no downtown, no business district. Greenfield, pretty much the same thing. Corcoran, same thing. And none of these cities get any local government aid, and they would love to have something that the small towns that I drive around in Minnesota would have. We really ache for a certain amount of business convenience to serve the community right locally. We have to drive 10 miles to the nearest grocery store. I mean, there's not a grocery store anywhere in Corcoran, none in Greenfield, none in Minnetrista. I mean, it can go on and on and on. My point is that we extract income tax and we extract state general levy, and nothing comes back to these communities, nothing. And I'm just saying it should be done more at the local level and have the people within the community support the causes. Don't even, just in my own city, we finally, first, after more than 50 years, have got a city park. A city park. I go to Parker's Prairie, Minnesota, and they've got a swimming pool, and they've got a park, and, you know, they've got all sorts of little things that a city like mine would love to have. Like to have a main street, but we don't. So that's the point I've consistently tried to make about LGA. And the fact that it exists, maybe that's okay, but the formula is really screwed up, really bad, because there is about 10% of the cities around the state that get absolutely nothing. Thank you.
More discussion on the A16 amendment. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Interesting discussion. I, too, see the value of LGA out in our greater Minnesota areas. But getting back to the amendment here, it was stated that this amendment would guarantee a long-term stable LGA formula. I don't see that being done with this amendment, because the legislature can always change the entire formula, cut it back, and we hear time and time again that we aren't back to 2002 levels yet. So the program can be changed, has been changed, and this amendment, in my opinion, does not guarantee a long-term stable LGA formula.
Thank you. More discussion on the A16 amendment. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A16 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The A16 is not adopted.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Wolf,
since the wonders of the copying machine put a number of things together, let's just go to the second one that was stapled here, even though we're kind of hopping topics, and that would be the A21 amendment. And this amendment would reinstate the political contribution refund program. And this one has perplexed me, Mr. Chair, because I'm not sure it even fits or is in the purview of this bill, because I don't believe it has ever been referred to this committee. It doesn't. The political contribution refund does not have to do with local government finance, and it doesn't have to do with property taxes. So I think this isn't the right venue even to have this discussion about whether it should continue or not. But I think there's also good policy reasons to continue the program, because I think it has supported grassroots democracy, something that I've heard people speaking about. We've adopted an amendment earlier that provides for reverse referendums. It empowers citizens in a variety of ways. This is another way of empowering low and modest income people to participate in democracy and to hold elected officials accountable in terms of to participate in the program. You have to agree to expenditure limits, public reporting, and to limit the amount of money that you take from PACs, lobbyists, and other special interests. And so I think that the program itself is worthy, but I also just don't believe that this is within the jurisdiction of this committee and its responsibilities, and I think we should take it out of the division report.
Representative Loeffler moves the adoption of the A21 amendment. And Representative Loeffler, this is an account that we carry in our books with this committee, the Political Contribution Refund Program. We did last biennium, too, and I don't know about the biennium before that, but it is in. Discussion on the amendment. Representative Loeffler.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like a roll call on this.
Okay, Representative Loeffler asked for a roll call. There will be a roll call discussion. Hearing none, and the chair would recommend a no vote on this amendment. The clerk will take the roll on the amendment.
Chair Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Hertas. Representative Loeffler.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Carlson. Representative Erickson. Representative Frankie.
No.
Representative Lean.
Aye.
Representative Lunin.
No.
Representative Marquardt.
No.
Representative Nelson. Representative New.
No.
Representative Rarick.
No.
Representative Whalen.
No.
Representative Joachim.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
There being four ayes and nine noes, the amendment does not prevail. Is not adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
The A3 that was also stapled in this packet is the Moorhead one that we already acted on, so you can recycle that.
Got that one. You put it in a plastic bag, Representative Loeffler.
only if it's compostable.
Are there amendments? Did we miss one of the ones we have in front of us? Representative Marquardt?
Mr. Chair, I've got the A9 amendment I'd like to move.
Representative Marquardt moves the A9 amendment. Do we have it before us or not? I think it's coming out around. The A9
Mr.
amendment.
Mr. Chair, if I can speak to it while
it's being passed. If you would, Representative Marquardt.
Very good. So what is in the bill repeals this, and this is eliminating the repealer to keep basically this local performance aid and program in place. And basically this was developed in 2010, and it was the Council on Local Results and Innovation. And the reason it came about is that we spend about $3.4 billion every 2 years on property tax aids and credits, with about half of that amount going out to local government aid and county program aid. And the idea is, when the state sends those dollars out, we should know, as state officials, what type of services our cities and counties are providing to residents. And so what this council that was determined is there would be 10 performance measures for cities and 10 performance measures for counties. And it was a voluntary program. And if a city or county decided to do it, they would have to select 10 of the performance measures, and the state auditor has to do a report every year. And for example, in the cities, here are just some examples that they could do. A rating of overall quality of services, which would be a survey sent out to residents. Part one, crime rates. How safe citizens feel in their community. The ISO fire insurance rating, that determines the lower the better. The average fire response time, fire calls per 1,000 population, average city street pavement condition rating, operating cost per 1 million gallons of water, number of sewer blockages on a city system per 100 connections, and then city's rating of overall quality of snow plowing. Anyway, these cities would do that, and to qualify, the city has to do a resolution. They have to gather this information and provide it to the public through some way, and then they also have to send it into the state auditor. And if you go on the report, the state auditor has that listed. Now, I will say that in 2016, only 27 cities, about 3%, and 19 counties, 22%, did this. And I looked through there, Clay County, one of the counties I represent, they do a fantastic job, and they've got everything listed, and they've got a survey that's like 40-some pages. But part of the idea was transparency, accountability, and you know, if more cities did this, you could do kind of a best practices. So you could look at a city that's, let's say, surveying its citizens 1 through 5, and it's like a 4.5, which is pretty good, at a lower cost, versus a city that's getting lower ratings of safety at a higher cost. You could say, hey, what's this city kind of doing? So I think it's a really, when we kind of talk about accountability, and I'm actually thinking rather than eliminating it, looking at ways to actually encourage it more, because it is a way in which we as kind of stakeholders and these dollars we send out can get more accountability from our cities and counties. And so I just ask members to take another look at that because, oh, and the cost of it is, I think, $392,000 was the cost of eliminating it. So, and certainly if more, well, as a city, if you got into it, or a county, you'd get 14 cents per capita to a maximum of $25,000. So if it costs you some money to send out a survey and gather all this, we were kind of providing a little bit of a carrot out there for cities and counties to get involved with the program. So I think it's worth keeping. I do think if this ultimately we got more cities, we could really use this for a lot of good information, even looking at best practices on cities that are doing things really well at a good cost. How are you doing it? It'd be great to kind of take that statewide. So, members, I'd ask for your support to hang on to this program and actually maybe ask folks to see if there's ways in which we could maybe encourage more participation than what we're getting. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we had talked a little bit yesterday on this, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Questions, members? Comments on the amendment? Members, I understand that this, if we don't repeal this and we accept this amendment, that we would still be okay in the eyes of the target people, the target police within the caucus, if you will. So, Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. You had mentioned that Clay County does this. Do you know, do you have any idea, Representative, what the participation level was? I mean, how many people actually respond? Because in my industry, out in the private sector, we do a lot of this too, but we really struggle with, which is kind of the point you made, we struggle with participation and what we can do to get people more engaged to actually give the feedback. I was just wondering if you have a...
Yeah,
Representative Markworth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Lunan, when I looked at the city of Austin, they sent out like 2,000 surveys and got 197 back. In Dilworth, we would send this out, and we would send it to every five on a random scale of our utility billings, which we get about 200 back, about one out of five. But it was always pretty good. You could measure now in Clay County. When I looked at their survey, they had 31. So I don't know how they did that for sure. If they kind of had people coming, so which is a very small number.
Right.
But then they also computed all the other kind of stats on that, all sorts of things on even juvenile out-of-home placements and so forth. They had all sorts of really good info. But, yes, it is. I mean, but if you can at least get some, you can at least get an idea of what people are thinking about your services.
Mr. Chairman, I share your frustration that actually the better the survey is, the less response you get. The more clip it is, the shorter, the less you're getting done with it, the more likely people are to fill it out. It's a very frustrating situation.
Yes.
Hard to get the feedback.
Yeah.
Other questions, comments? Okay, members, seeing none, all in favor of adopting the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, members.
Next amendment, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is, I'd like to move Amendment A6, and maybe we can keep this trend of yes votes going here. So this is with regards to franchise fees, deleting the provisions relating to franchise.
The A6 is coming around.
It's going around.
This is Representative Vogel's provision in the bill. questions, members, on the amendment? And the page 137 is a reference in the bill. If people are, I want to find the.
Yep. Line. And maybe, Mr. Chair, while other members are looking through the packets, I can provide a little commentary.
First of all, Representative Carlson officially moves the A6 amendment. And Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So currently by law, cities can charge utilities a franchise fee for the use of public-owned right-of-way. Many of the cities that have adopted these franchise fees and they're throughout the state, this provides a sustainable and consistent funding source to essentially repair roads. That's the vast majority of these funds are being used for road repairs. And the reason why, you know, franchise fees, based on my research, has really been kind of, it's not their first go-to source. But what I've personally experienced through my city as well as in talking with others is that this sustainable, consistent funding source for road repairs is necessary because, quite frankly, they're not getting the support from the state. So this allows for them to have for that because having a public works background, when you set forth your pavement management program, there's a certain amount of roadway that you need to repair every year to stay on course, to maintain that level of pavement throughout your city. And if you run through a recession where you need to dial back and you can only repair less roads in a given year, then you're constantly playing catch up. So this is a means in which for those local municipalities to provide for that to ensure that roads stay on, road repairs stay on schedule. So I just wanted to mention that kind of brief story because I think some of that was lost in previous testimony. So I would encourage your support here.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Members, questions, comments? This is a provision I know that Representative Vogel has worked for each of the last 3 years on, and the chair would encourage a no vote on the amendment. Discussion, members? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A6 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Other amendments? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A11. I think it's being passed out right now.
Can you tell us what page of the bill it's on, Representative Joaquin?
Yes, it's on page 53 after line 9.
Can you say that again?
On page 53 after line 9.
And it's the A11, Representative Joaquin?
And it's the A11.
Representative Joaquin moves the A11 amendment.
Thank you. Just grabbing my right notes here. So many pieces of paper going on today. I'm sure you all understand that. This actually was a provision in Chair Davids' bill, House File 893. It was the larger tax bill. And it's a program that we're all pretty familiar with. It's the senior property tax deferral program. Those of you who have served on city councils probably are very familiar with folks coming in over 65 that have an income level under a certain threshold and have their property taxes deferred until they sell their home. This just makes some minor changes to kind of adjust to what we're seeing in the market right now with seniors. One of the changes is to have, right now they have to occupy their house for 15 years. This bill would change it to 5. And the reason behind that is that, as we know, a lot of folks, as they're trying to age in place, will downsize or move into something more manageable. A lot of them will wait maybe as long as they can until they're about 75, then move in and only be in there for 5 years and would like to do the deferral, you know, at from 8 years and over. So this really adjusts what we're already seeing in the market as folks age in place. And then the other change in it is to change the application deadline from before July to November 1st. And the reason behind that is our cities set their preliminary tax levy in September, and we want to give folks a chance to see what that tax levy is to decide whether or not they're going to have to use the deferral program. And then it also applies then to their May payment. So two little changes that seem minor, but it could really help a lot of folks. We all know from our own communities that folks try to age in place that it's actually a lot less burden on the rest of our HHS system. It's a lot cheaper than going into assisted living or into a nursing home. And this just gives our seniors more options. And I would really appreciate a yes vote.
Questions for the author on the amendment? Members? Okay. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know what impact this would have from a fiscal perspective?
Yes, Ms. Schill will go through that first.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, this is the governor's provision. There is a slight cost, $170,000 in fiscal 19, and then $250,000 in each year in the tails, and it's ongoing.
Thank you, Ms. Schill. Other questions, members? Members, I'd recommend a no vote on the amendment. I know that Chair David's bill will have significant relief for Minnesota seniors, and this will add to our target and increase spending, especially in the ALPA annual. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to call attention to remind people that we just did a carve-out for Rogers that was $750,000. This would apply to seniors around the state. And from the previous discussion we had in Representative Marquardt's bill, it sounds like there's a little bit more flexibility in maybe the internal caucus budget targets for this committee. So I would really suggest a yes vote, and I ask for a roll call.
Representative Joaquin requests a roll call. There will be a roll call on the amendment. More discussion, members? Hearing none, the clerk will take the roll on the A11 amendment.
Chair Gostkowski.
No.
Representative Hertas. Representative Loeffler.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Erickson. Representative Frankie.
No.
Representative Lean.
Aye.
Representative Lunin.
No.
Representative Marquardt.
Yes.
Representative Nelson. Representative New.
No.
Representative Rarick.
No.
Representative Whalen. Representative Joaquim.
Yes.
Okay, there being 5 ayes and 7 noes, the A11 amendment is not adopted. The motion does not prevail, and the A11 is not adopted. Anyone else? Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair, I have an A10 amendment that deals with the administrative driving fines.
Okay, Representative Loeffler moves the A10 amendment.
That'll have to be handed out. That while it's being handed out, I did appreciate you, Mr. Chair, letting us know about this situation where it appears that municipalities are choosing to create administrative diversion programs and have been criticized for that as not having authorization either by both the state auditor and in some instances by the courts. And it diverts revenue from our court system. And in your frustration of that these seem to continue on. And so you had in your base bill a deduct of local government aid or county program aid for communities that were doing this. But as we discussed, it doesn't have a consequence for people who don't receive those state aids. And as I said with my earlier amendment, I really think that that maybe isn't the role of CPA and LGA, so I thought we'd come up with a different system of revenue recapture. And what this does is it says that if a court finds that a municipality is operating this diversion program without authority, that the court can order it to close down and determine the amounts that were inappropriately collected, and then negotiate with the county or the city a repayment term in which the repayment would be deducted from their county property tax settlement. So whether a city had LGA or not, if it was determined they'd collected $30,000 that they shouldn't have, that should have been diverted into the court administrative costs, they could say, well, we think our budget is sustainable to pay that back over 3 years, $10,000 a year to the court system. That's a repayment system they would have to work out with the courts. And so it treats all local governments the same, whether they have a particular revenue source or not, and it allows them to work out with the courts after the courts have found that this is inappropriate, a way of restitution in effect.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Members, questions, comments? I would just offer that I think, Representative Loeffler, some of this is really infringing upon the Public Safety Committee's territory, I think, with this amendment. And I know that the language in the bill is really focused on whether or not we give out local government aid and county program aid rather than creating an account that would be under their jurisdiction, as the amendment does. So I think the language you have in the bill is actually better and a better fit for this committee for sure in the bill. Any other questions, comments, members on the amendment? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to applaud you for tackling this subject too, because it's been around for a while. Maybe we can work on it together next year. But I worry about linking this to local government aid, because some cities don't get it. What happens if they're perpetrators of this diversion program and now they're not getting any quote-unquote punishment for it? So think about the equality basis on that as well, and would it suggest a yes vote.
Representative Gillick, and I will mention, members, neither Minneapolis or St. Paul or Ramsey or Hennepin County are violators. They're all following the law in this area. So I just want you to know that.
Of course they are.
Other questions, comments, members? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A-10 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
No.
The motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have an A2 amendment. I will let that be passed out. I don't even know if I have it in front of me here. Let's see. So I direct your attention to line 7, and basically I think this would add a new section. This is a topic we're all familiar with, because I thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me have a hearing on this before you. This is the This Old House, This Old Shop bill. And to do a brief refresher, it allows businesses and homes that qualify, homes that are under 400,000, businesses that are under 2 million, so really hitting our small Main Street businesses, and it exempts property tax from the portion of improvement that they make on their property. So just the property tax on the improvement that they make on their property for 10 years. And I took some suggestions. There was a lot of interest among the committee members here on doing something with this program. So the League of Minnesota Cities spoke to many of you, and we kind of took all the suggestions and kind of amended the bill. So the amendment you see before you includes those suggestions. And that is, I put a 15-year sunset on the program, so it'll only be in existence for 15 years, and then we can look at it again and see how it's working. I took out the phase-in of the value back into the property, so after 10 years, that exemption blinks off. So I know the assessors had said it was too complicated to do this program, even though, yes, they've done it in the past. This makes it even more simpler for them to apply this program. So right away after 10 years, the value blinks back on. I also, I know there was some concern to some of the improvement. Not Representative Hurtas isn't here, but he was worried about folks using this for simple things like air conditioning. So I took that out. You couldn't use it for air conditioning unless you are changing a radiated house into forced air, which we all know if you've been in old homes. That takes a lot of infrastructure work with putting vents back into a house. So that would still be included. I think it's a really valuable program. I think it's going to help not only some of our older homes in our communities, but I think it really, 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 for those of you who have older commercial industrial properties valued under $2 million, I think it could really help those folks improve those properties without worrying that improvement's going to go straight on their tax rolls the next year. And I shared a story when we were in before committee before. I had a constituent who's a business owner come forward to me with this idea because when he purchased his property, he had rolled in to the purchase of his property into his loan what he was going to use to fix up the place. And lo and behold, the next year on his assessed value, that was all included in his next assessed value. So it's a program that I introduced my first year, my second year here, my third year here. I will continue to work on it, but I think this is a really good start. And like I said, it's only for 15 years. The phase-in blinks off right away, so it should not be that hard for the assessors to figure out. And I look forward to your yes vote.
Representative Joaquin moves the A15 amendment. Discussion, members? Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think Representative Joaquin has done a lot to address some of the concerns that were raised by various people to try and make it a really workable program. And while we have a huge part of this bill dealing with TIF program exceptions, and we do a lot in terms of promoting new tax-based development and growth, we really have not stepped up to assist people in maintaining the existing tax base, which is the majority of properties in any community around the state. And if you don't maintain them, you can lose your competitive edge, and no matter what you do on TIF exceptions, it might not bring in what you're hoping for. And I think that when it was in operation, I heard from people who were willing to step forward and do the kinds of big improvements that you like to see because they had a sense that they could pay off their home improvement loan before their taxes would go up to reflect that. And, you know, they were willing to pay for the increased value, but they really had to get through that home improvement loan first. And I think for a lot of our small businesses, a lot of the old buildings are just energy inefficient. They could really save operating costs if they could upgrade their heating plant, do some other sort of things without it creating a big drain on that business while they're operating. And so I think it really helps enrich our main streets as well, where we have a lot of small, older properties that probably do need to be refreshed and reinvested in.
Okay, other questions, comments, members on the bill? I just remind members this would still be a shift from some property owners to others, and so if that's certainly important to you, you may not want to support the bill. I'd recommend a no vote on the bill or on the amendment. Yes vote on the bill, but a no vote on the amendment. Questions, comments, members? Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Joaquin. As you know, we've discussed this bill, and I do like provisions of it. So with a lot of aging infrastructure in my areas, I do think it needs a little bit more work, so I look forward to working with you on this in the future.
Other discussion? Members? Okay. With that, all in favor of adopting the A15 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair, I have an A8 amendment.
Representative Loeffler moves the A8 amendment.
And it, again, is a short, sweet deletion so you don't need to see the paper to understand what it is. And this would repeal the reinstate the Minneapolis Library Aid, which
page in the bill represents?
And it is on page 76, section 27.
Thank you.
And, you know, I think that the state needs to honor its commitments to our local governments, no matter who they are. There's a variety of ways that we contribute to projects in various communities. We do it sometimes through cash, sometimes through bonding, sometimes through debt assumption. And this was done some time ago, and it was a commitment and a recognition that the Minneapolis Downtown Library is really a statewide resource. It is the third largest public library of any city in Minneapolis, and in the U.S., excuse me, and it has more than 2.4 million items, most of which are nonfiction research type items that are used by every library and accessed through the library sharing program throughout the state. So if you have, you know, K through 12 students doing a research project, a MinSCU student, or someone who's looking into a career or wants a specialized manual for something, chances are when they go to their local library, they'll order it from Minneapolis, and it's sent without charge to users throughout the state. And it also is the home of one of the largest patent libraries in the nation, and is used by emerging businesses all the time who are looking to establish new products and build their businesses. It also has a foundation and private giving collection that is used by nonprofits in every community of the state to look at national and regional grant opportunities. And so it has served as a statewide resource, and these funds were provided in part in recognition of that. And it seems to me that we should follow through on the commitment of previous legislators to continue this aid.
Thank you, Representative Roth. Questions on the A8th Amendment, members? Any at all? I would just mention, so that the impact of this would be, it would cost us an additional $8 million in the out biennium in our bill, if compared to what our bill is. And so I'd recommend a no vote on the amendment. Any other questions, comments on the amendment? All in favor of the A8, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail, and A8 is not adopted.
And Mr. Chair, I think we've come to the point where last night we had House Research diligently running those computers and trying to get some cost estimates to us. And we do have a few amendments that would change the priorities in spending on the bill, but we really want to make sure that they're balanced and that we understand what we're proposing. And so I would like to take advantage of your offer of a short recess just so that we can confer with our staff and make sure that the balance, the amendments that we bring forward to you match up with the numbers.
And let's exercise that, Representative Loeffler, but I think Representative New has an amendment for
I do. Representative New? I do have one amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A25 amendment.
Representative New moves the A25 amendment. Is that what I heard correct?
Correct.
A25 amendment.
That's correct. And this essentially would allow Taylor's Falls to designate the city as a development zone. And we would allocate $100,000, and that allocation would come out of the border cities funding.
Representative New moves the A25 amendment. Discussion on A25. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Representative Neal. This would be for the border city program that's on the western edge of the border, Minnesota border.
Representative.
The funding would come out of the border city's allocation? Correct.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Neal, I certainly understand what you would like to do. I know I've worked with your predecessor about this, and listening to his concerns and what he has, you know, we do have a very unique, very different situation on the western border, and I'm not opposed to what you want to do, what the program is. I just don't like the idea of taking money out of the pot that's already been designated for the Western Minnesota Border City Program. And that's a program that's been around since the early 80s. And really the, you know, the reasoning for it is because we have a situation where we have directly adjacent to the Minnesota cities, larger cities in the Dakotas. And so that creates some of the disparities and things like that. And so really, I mean, there's been a proven track record of success for the Border City Program as it exists. And like I say, I don't, you know, I'm not opposed to what you want to do. I would just rather see we set up a different program. Maybe, you know, through that we'd be able to find some different parameters to make that program work better for your situation as compared to what's happening across the city on the western side. So, you know, I would just request a no vote on this, and if anything, I'd rather see us develop a program that could be more tailored, not to, but more tailored to your district, and so that we could use a different pot of money for that.
Thank you, Representative Lean. I'm wondering, Ms. Schill, I thought there was actually a balance left in this account that was unspent by some of the cities earlier. Where are we at with this account?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, as we heard the Border City allocation bill, and that was Representative Keel's bill, 671, there was approximately $250,000 as a balance from the previous allocation that we had. I would also bring your attention to line 87 of the spreadsheet, where we, in the division report, we are adding an additional $3 million to the Border City allocation.
Thank you, Ms. Schill. Representative New?
Yes. Representative Lean, I appreciate your comments, and I certainly understand where you're coming from, and I'd be happy to work with you on that in the future. For this time, I'd like to see some of that funding go towards Taylor's Falls. But I'd be happy to work with you on that in the future.
Thank you. Other discussion members? Representative Markworth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just kind of to give a little light on why there's a reserve in some of these Border City accounts is that right now it's only on a two-year basis and it's not ongoing. So the city of Dilworth, for example, which gets Border Cities, because you don't know for sure if you're going to get future funding, it's not like a consistent thing. You save dollars because you might get a business that comes in and you want to be able to, you know, have some dollars there. So that's why you really, not all of it is used. And that's why if you could get a permanent basis on the Border Cities, you would have, they'd probably be using it up each year because they know they have some, but they've got to leave some in reserve for potential development that comes in. They can't just spend it all. Then they have kind of nothing. So that's kind of, I think, where, I don't know where all the reserves, but I'm willing to bet it's probably Dilworth, East Grand Forks, Breckenridge, probably the smaller cities. Because Moorhead, I don't know if they've got much for reserve, which is the largest city in that group. I would say it would be the smaller ones that don't receive as much allocation as, say, Moorhead. So they kind of bank it up a little bit so they, a business comes in, they can do some things. But they're using money also, but they always want to save a little bit for this new business that might come in.
Representative Markworth, there's some conservatives out by you.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I found that. Yes, there are, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And without having the information directly in front of me, but I think the balance in the Moorhead account is less than $100,000. So, you know, and again, you know, just to echo what Representative Markworth said, it is nice to have those reserve dollars in the event that a new business comes in and we can provide some incentives. I know for Moorhead, we use a lot of that money to offset a lot of workers' compensation costs between Minnesota and North Dakota. So again, just having some of those reserves does help us for looking out at new businesses.
More discussion. More discussion. With that, the chair would recommend a yes vote on this one, but all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The motion is adopted. It does pass, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Loeffler, about a half hour, maybe?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think so. I think we just need a little time to confer on the numbers with our staff, and then they'll have to, they know the outline of the amendments, but they need to plug it in and run the copies, so it'll take a little bit to...
Okay, well... We will recess for an early lunch lunch break. Shoot for about 11:20 p.m. or so. We'll try her again at 11:20. With it.
A.m.
11:20 a.m.
Can I say p.m.?
So it is the staff.
P.m. would be like what the staff endured last night.
The staff that worked till 1 a.m., not me. So with that, the committee is in recess until 11:20 a.m.
Yeah.
You sure you want to
go?
Come on, you love it.
Oh, very good. Also, Morehead's got the biggest.
Well, he did. I didn't hear that.
And you know, the first year there was a fall off because people didn't, they were, not everybody could measure up, but the ones that have stayed on have not changed. Okay, so that's good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So
they say 22% counties.
Yeah.
And it's usually cities like that are not the waste mile, but they live in the
I noticed that.
And that part is important because without the community, they might not. It's like they're at the
I don't speak.
So, anyway.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Yes.
My wife is. Well, they think once they
How you doing? Hey, you know that So what I would like to do that's related but to get engaged with is expensive marketing. But I met with these doctors. Some of them come out.
So I got some of the
I was sick of Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the end kind of Gilworth. We get bought a fifth of that. You know, we'd send out for the we probably sent out about 300. We did about 100.
You know what I mean? We would have a
social study. Home and home certainly over the past.
So disingenuous, but what it should be based on is whether you knew with me. Because that's the ultimate
service. Sure, yeah.
They're like, oh, no, and you got some business manager who doesn't put out spreadsheets validating their position. Like, no, I want to know.
Yeah, no, you're right. Exactly. The bottom line should be.
So I did my bill with the healthcare too, where certain people are doctors.
Oh,
the medical provider has to provide you with for the insurance company. And what I want to do is
I want a CPA where
all your CPT goes down. Every medical procedure, even if you go to the doctor, every 10 minutes, so that's going to be on there. And have a link to where you can look. Type in the CPT code. Here's what the same behavior is. And how some people are. But then it's on the website where now you get, you're, I don't know, you are working at 6 years have been better to you. Okay, so but you go through and now you get this stuff. And they say, well, you got to take this test or this therapy or this pill or whatever.
You 494 then?
Yeah, you type in the CPT code and your zip code in Gilbert. And then you drop from how far you're going to go. How far you're going to go. And then you get the plus everyone.
It really breaks your heart.
It's all right on because here's what they're going to charge you. And the medical
budget, although they started working on that,
so I go and I sent you to for health
that's
perfect.
You know what they're discussing?
consumers are the ones that all better get the savings.
It's okay. I understand.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome to the deck. I'm doing my airborne.
Oh, nice.
Abigail gave me this idea yesterday, so I went out and bought airborne. And drank them all night and took my vitamin C.
Well, you made
it. Okay.
Hey, every year
I'll do your week.
Okay.
The ag nuisance bar is good.
Members, I call the meeting back to order. We are, I think Mr. Cummings has a handout that he was, rather than actually discussing it, the Board of Assessors had a had an input piece that they wanted to provide about the assessor accreditation. So Mr. Cummings is going to pass that out. And members, you'll have that in front of you. We are, where are we? Representative Luff, let's see. I know that we've got a couple more technical amendments coming, but Representative Lothar, do you have an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we have the A20 amendment that will be handed out. And what this does is deals with the renter's credit and the homestead credit, increasing that. As per the bill that I presented, House File 2182, so it increases it for both the renters and homeowners. Just to update it, it hasn't been changed, the brackets, those sorts of things, the threshold since 2013, and obviously our housing situations, our tax situations have changed since 2013. And it's really about an amendment that sets a set of priorities, and that your bill dedicates most of your money to the reduction in the statewide property tax levy on commercial industrial properties, forgiving the first $200,000 of value, and taking off the inflator that has been a part of this since the beginning. And we feel that on the inflation, no other property type, no other levy is being frozen, and we don't think that it's fair to have just the commercial, industrial, seasonal rec people be treated differently than anyone else in terms of having a frozen levy. They have been advantaged, as we discussed in an earlier hearing, in that the implicit price deflator that they have, that is the basis of the inflation on the statewide general levy, has been significantly less than the actual increase in levies by city, counties, and townships. So it actually has worked to their advantage to have that particular measure being used as the inflation index. You know, I'm sure when we put it on, we wouldn't have predicted that necessarily, but that has been the effect, partly going through the recession with major cutbacks in support to local government. And so we take away the inflator, and we also limit the we continue that you don't pay, that you exempt the first $200,000 of a commercial industrial property from the statewide levy, but we limit that to commercial properties with a total market value of less than $2.5 million. The value of that that exemption is a little over $700, or $1,500, excuse me. And $1,500 in a tax break on a 40-story skyscraper isn't enough to give any of its tenants probably a quarter a month break. But for a small Main Street business, saving $1,500 is huge. And so we really target it at the commercial industrial properties under $2.5 million. Which is the vast, vast majority of commercial industrial properties in the state. And then we reallocate that money that is saved by tightening up the benefits of this while still extending it to most businesses.
And we dedicate that money to the homestead credit and the renter's credit because we think that not just commercial industrial property deserves property tax relief, but we also should be targeting some of it to our homeowners and our renters, particularly those of modest means. And as we've heard in previous hearings, 70% of it goes to people earning under $30,000. In many rural counties, it primarily goes to seniors and people with disabilities. It's a program that's become a mainstay of many households' budgets planning, and we think it's a fair way to have a balanced package. And with that, I'd be glad to... and there's one other change that I should highlight. We know that we support the chair's desire to go to more accurate measures of property... rent that constitutes property taxes. But in working with our staff, we are increasingly convinced that there will be significant winners and losers, and we're afraid that most of the losers will be senior citizens on fixed incomes and people with disabilities because their budgets don't change much. Some of them are living in housing in which the state basically pretty much sets the rent of what they can pay for housing, and we don't want some unanticipated consequences of them suffering major financial cutbacks because we adopted a policy without modeling it. We've asked our staff if there is a way to model it, and it really is a complicated thing. So we're proposing that going to the more accurate regional measures of rent constituting property taxes begin not this in 2018 but in 2019, and we asked the Department of Revenue to model that and give us next January information about, you know, who would win, who would lose, so we could do some adjusting if we needed. Otherwise, I think we're going to find in some communities you're going to have a senior building, a building that has a lot of people with disabilities in, and you're going to have the entire building upset that it was such a dramatic change that wasn't really necessarily anticipated by us at that level, so we can refine it before it goes into effect. And we think that it's worth the one-year wait to not run into a buzzsaw of unanticipated consequences in 2018. So that, Mr. Chair, is a summary of how we fund it and our priority of making sure that all property taxpayers get some relief given the size of the budget that you've been granted.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Loeffler moves the 820 amendment. Discussion, members? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't like seeing a cap or a limit put on the CI tax thing because I have no idea what a skyscraper costs, but I think it's a whole lot more than $2.5 million. And I know out in, a commercial building, even a modest one, I think could easily approach that cost or go over it. So I'm not comfortable at all with the limit on the exemptions for CI property. So I would oppose it for that reason, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Representative Walker.
Mr. Chair, to that point, I can tell you that we tried to get some good information about the breakdown of CI property by value, and the vast majority, probably three-fourths of it is under $300,000 in value. It is, you know, we don't have that many skyscrapers, but $1,500 on a skyscraper's tax bill, even on a modest, five-story building, if you divide it by the tenants, $1,500, $300 a floor, tenants per floor, if it's an office building, it really doesn't have much of an impact. And we really felt it was more important to have an impact on all the homeowners and all the renters, as well as the small and medium-sized businesses throughout the state. And, Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Thank you. And Representative Loeffler's request a roll call. There will be a roll call and amendment. Representative Kurtos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler. When I introduced the CI property tax reform in the last legislative session, The research and the statistics that I had, and I suspect it hasn't changed too much, is there are about 122,000 CI property taxpayers in the state. Of that 122,000, about 80% of them are valued at 500,000 or less. So 80% of 122 is roughly 100,000. So there's 22,000 CI properties that are valued above 500. And although I would agree with you that the benefit for a mega mall may not seem like much, the concern or the worry that this is a tax break for big corporate entities is really a little hollow because they don't pay any taxes. Most of the tenants in it are on a triple net lease, and that is passed on through. So even though the benefit may be minuscule, I think as a matter of policy, it's a good policy to treat all businesses the same, and that the benefit of being the tenant is that you'll see, however modest, still a reduction, and that everybody's treated the same. So I understand what you're saying, but I would encourage a no vote on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hertos. Other questions, members? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of speaking to that as well, I think one of the reasons we looked at this is some of the higher value properties that might be a drop in the bucket to them, but that money could be spent better elsewhere. And that investment that we're making with our tax dollars in homestead and residential and our smaller businesses make a much bigger direct impact than to some of the bigger businesses that money's not even going to stay in Minnesota. That money's going to other states. It's going to other countries. So I think this is a better targeted look at trying to fix this. I wish we could find the money to actually go under go up to businesses that were exempt their first $200,000 to $250,000. And, you know, if we could get some more money in the tax bill, maybe we could look at that. But hitting those high end when it's, one, not going to affect them as much, two, the money's not even going to stay in Minnesota, I just think it's better used at our small town Main Street businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Representative Erickson, and then Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Representative Roffler in regard to the report that's required. What is it you're trying to accomplish?
Representative Roffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erickson. This bill and amendment continues Chair Duskowski's suggestion that we change the percent of rent that constitutes property taxes to a regional system. And in talking with our staff, our nonpartisan staff, we expect that there will be winners and losers. The losers, I think, will disproportionately be at the lower income end, which is disproportionately seniors and people with disabilities, because we think that we need to have we don't know about the geographic distribution. Right now we know this program benefits people in greater Minnesota more than here. They may be more the losers or not. We think it would be useful to see some analysis before we implemented it, rather than having a lot of constituents whose economic situation hasn't changed. They're a retired couple on a fixed income living in a senior building. They're a person on disability on Social Security disability payment, and who would see a dramatic decrease, we think, in the renter's credit based on what they've had in the past, even with putting in additional money. And so we think it would be better to just delay that a year so that the Department of Revenue could model it and we could see the results before we implement it.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
And Representative Roffler, who pays for this report?
Representative Roffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Erickson, I expect that the Department of Revenue will do that just as they do a variety of analyses for us. They collect all this data right now. They're the ones who did the numbers that the chair has put into the bill based on geographic area. They'd want to update that to refine it. And so our expectation is that the research department would do it.
Representative Erickson?
Well, Mr. Chair, considering that Minnesota is one of few states who provides a renter's credit, I think we are very blessed to even have a renter's credit.
Thank you. Representative Carlson? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Representative Anderson, just to follow up in terms of your concerns about the $2 million limit. Granted, you know, there's probably some arbitrary component to that in terms of how we came up with the $2 million. Is there, in your opinion, is it $3 million? Is it $5 million? Or is that just something that is one of many concerns you may have? I just wanted to see if there was something in your mind that would lend itself to addressing some of your concerns.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess my main concern with having a limit period is that there's always going to be somebody that's just a couple hundred dollars or a couple thousand dollars over that limit. When you construct, again, a commercial building, they're expensive. And so I guess my primary opposition is that whatever that limit would be set at, you're going to have somebody that's just over the limit and, hey, why can't I get that same break? So that's my concern.
Other questions, members? Representative Carlson?
No, Mr. Chair. Just looking for to see if that was the concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, anything else? Okay. A roll call has been requested on the A20 amendment. And with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Hertas.
No.
Representative Roffler.
Yes.
Representative Anderson. Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Kremke.
No.
Representative Lean.
Aye.
Representative Lunin.
Nope.
Representative Marquardt.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative New.
No.
Representative Rarick.
No.
Representative Whalen.
No.
Representative Joachim.
Yes.
Okay, with the vote being 6 ayes and 10 noes, the amendment is not adopted, or the motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Woffler.
We have one more amendment coming, and it hasn't come down yet.
Okay, I've got another one for filler, Representative.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, members, we have another technical piece that didn't get applied originally to the author's amendment. So as author of the amendment and having voted on the prevailing side, I would move reconsideration of the A22 amendment. And I'm trying to remember reconsideration I don't think is debatable. All in favor of reconsidering the A22 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is reconsidered. So, members, before us we have the A22 amendment. That was the author's amendment with the technical changes. And from staff, I am told on line 1.3, we need to add on the end of it. So after the word that appears on there, and delete, in quotes, the word years. So and delete years and insert year. So and delete years and insert year. Did that work, staff? Okay. Questions on that? It was simply an S. It should not have been on the word years. It's pretty minor. Discussion on the amendment. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the amendment to the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Discussion on the amendment as amended. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the amended A22 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is passed as amended. Any other... Representative Lean?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I do have the A29 amendment, which I believe is being passed around.
Thank you. Representative Lean moves the A29 amendment. Representative Lean, would you like to introduce it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The A29 amendment would bring the exemption on the CI state levy up to the $100,000 level It would also keep the inflator on there, and the purpose is to still provide some tax relief to small businesses across the state, provide some tax cuts to those small businesses across the state. And with the savings, we would be putting that money into local government aid, county program aid, and township aid. So this is a way to, spread the benefits of the surplus and the strong economic health of the state right now. Like I said, still preserving some of those tax cuts for small businesses while also getting some additional money out to local governments across the state.
Thank you. Discussion, members, on the A29 amendment. Representative Markworth.
So, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think it's $50 million, Representative Lean, into county program aid. It's got to ask that question, just so I... That's not correct. Okay. So, you heard from the Association of Minnesota Counties. They've been working very hard on correcting a formula that has really adversely impacted, as you know, Mr. Chair, a lot of these smaller populated, higher agricultural type of counties that they fell off basically half of the formula because that formula is based on kind of your wealth and it's your property value total in the county divided by population. So as these ag values went way up and these smaller counties saw a decline, you were dividing a smaller number and a larger number. So it made them look so wealthy that they basically kind of went off the list. And I know the AMC corrects that, but and I know if you were to fund it, at least at, I think they need like $40 million, they're able to do that formula change, which would really, really be important. And so that part's, I think, important in this bill is that you can really help those small, rural, high ag counties. And then I think this also brings up the local government aid back to the 2003 certified level before kind of the first big cuts, which, we've talked about local government aid probably enough today, but it is highly important, so I urge a yes vote from members.
Thank you, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do request a roll call on this amendment, and just to clarify, yes, it would bring up LGA to about $68 million, county program aid up to about $50 million, and $4 million for township aid.
Thank you. And Representative Lean requests a roll call. There will be a roll call and amendment. More discussion. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I like about this bill, and being new, is that the 100,000 CI received 80% support last session, which is pretty amazing. So to have such a popular proposal being brought forth again, and also with some revenues to put to CPA, LGA, and townships, seems like a win-win for everybody.
Thank you. More discussion? Okay. Hearing none, the clerk will take the roll on the A29 amendment.
Chair Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Hertas.
No.
Representative Loeffler.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Frankie.
No.
Representative Lean.
Aye.
Representative Lunin.
No.
Representative Markworth.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative New.
No.
Representative Rarick.
Yes.
Representative Whalen.
No.
Representative Joachim.
Yes.
With a vote of 7 ayes and 9 noes, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Thank you. So, members, I have an A1 amendment to House File 654 coming around, and it's a correction of actually an amendment to provide clarity for the townships that was moved, I think, earlier, but we didn't get it into the motion earlier, so I'm digging for that right now. So I would move reconsideration of the amendment that put House File 654 on the bill. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
Motion passes. The amendment placing House File 654 on the bill, or the reconsideration of the amendment for placing 654 on the bill, is the reconsideration passes. With that, the A1 amendment in front of you provides clarity for the townships that they asked me early on in bringing this bill through, and very simply allows them to also have a special election when they have their town meeting, in addition to having it during the November election. So realizing they're all together for their town meeting anyway, which is probably the best place for them for that particular one. So that's the amendment, discussion on the A1 amendment to House File 654. Hearing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion passes, A1 is adopted. More discussion on the House File 654 as amended. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the motion to add House File 654 to the division report, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion passes. The amendment is adopted as amended. Representative Loeffler, any other amendments? Anybody?
Mr. Chair, we do not have any other amendments. Those last two, I think, were the way for us to demonstrate kind of our priorities. We'd had access to the amount of money, and it's an impressive amount of money that you and have been able to bring into the division today. Since this might be our last meeting, I thought I should take the chance to share some good news, and that many of you know Molly Richardson, who has been for many years our DFL House researcher, our DFL researcher on taxes. And on Sunday morning, she gave birth to a beautiful daughter, Mia McKenzie. And we wish them both well, and we look forward to seeing her back. But she won't be back probably before the end of session, and we're delighted to have Travis here working with us in the meantime. So.
All right. Thank you. Any other discussion on the House File 603 as amended? Representative Mark Hart.
So, well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank you for your leadership and your work on the agricultural property tax school bond credit. And I have to say I've thoroughly enjoyed working with you as we're looking at moving that system to a completely referendum market value. But your leadership is greatly appreciated. And that portion of the bill is really going to help our farmers, but also our rural school districts, and that is really good. And I also like the part in here where for disabled veteran spouses and caregivers. I don't know if that was really talked too much about, but that kind of property tax exemption for those folks in the bill, I think, is really good. And, you know, I know we talked a lot about the business property taxes today, but the approach this year is just much more measured, and I appreciate that, too. And I think we need to provide property tax relief for businesses. And I hope as we move forward, there's a little more balance as far as homeowners. And there is the $58 million for the one-time homestead credit refund, which is good. That will, I think, help knock down some of the property taxes that folks are seeing. And but I hope we get a little more balance on that. And then the renter's credit, I think we've got to get as close as we can to the actual amounts. I just worry about into the out years, kind of the loss of funding for some of those folks, and maybe that's going to be made up in other areas. But, Mr. Chair, there's a lot of things to like in the bill, and so I appreciate your work on a lot of areas. And I'm hoping we can get some LGA and county program aid in here a little bit later, maybe in the route somewhere. But thank you for your work, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. It's been a pleasure working with you on those items, too, and your leadership equally. Thank you so much. Representative Loeffler.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I should thank you for, too, is your consideration of all of the local option bills from both sides and all across the state. And you had a heavy lift this time because you had the 2015 and 2016 and 2017 ideas to get through. And we really appreciate that you listen to bills from both sides and communities across the state. And I had teased the chair that with 3 years worth of pent-up demand that his bill was going to be bigger than the HHS bill. But I've learned, no, it's not quite that big. The staff can do that pretty concisely. But we do appreciate the fact that you heard bills from both sides and gave them serious consideration and put them into the final bill. And as someone who sat down with some of the administrators and others, I think that you did a good job, too, of helping them streamline the administration of our tax system. Just the forfeited tax provisions were ones that they've been working on for a variety of years. They're kind of complicated and kind of boring, but they actually make life and much more fair for all taxpayers, and they streamline our administration, and we appreciate your stepping up to include in the bill some of those things that don't get the headlines but make a difference.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Loeffler, and thank you for your leadership as well. This session has been a pleasure working with you. Representative Lean?
I was, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to Representative Hertas, but I did want to request a roll call on the final division report vote.
Okay, and a roll call has been requested, and we will have a roll call. Representative Hertas?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I...
Vice Chair Hertas.
I wanted to also commend and thank everybody on the committee for their engagement. Not all committees do we see the level of engagement that we've had from all of our membership, so I am really grateful for that. And members, thanks for working with us. I'm glad to see that maybe the attitude towards commercial industrial tax relief has become more unified on both sides of the aisle. This, as you remember, was a temporary tax, and to the extent that even some of your amendments attempted to maybe pare that down a little bit and redistribute it, the state general levy, the remainder, which still exists, and is levied upon all business owners, large and small, all across the state, is going to the general fund and does come back in the form of county program aid and some of the other tax relief that we offer to all of our residents. I think what we're going to see, besides what we've done in this committee as a subcommittee of the tax committee as a whole, is I think we're going to see that all sorts of interest areas in the state with regard to property tax are going to see a relief, whether you're a veteran, whether you're a Social Security recipient, whether you're a small property tax payer or owner or a large one. I think we're going to see ag and farm, all the different areas. I think we're going to see a lot of relief. Voters were asked to step up to the plate and help make Minnesota solvent a few years ago, and I think we've done that, and it's time to reflect the fact that we don't need to be collecting the level of revenue that we are. So I thank the DFL members for your support in working together on the property tax bill. And lastly, I would like to thank our staff because I've seen getting emails at quarter after midnight and 12:30 that these folks have been working so hard to keep our committee rolling and moving. Again, I want to thank all of them for their efforts. So with that, Mr. Chair, it's been a privilege working on the committee this year.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hertas. And mentioning staff, we do have the list prepared here. This is our last meeting, and these people work tirelessly, many of them here till 1 or more in the morning this morning. Probably not the first time either this session, and some more of those nights and days ahead, and we appreciate your dedication and all that you do, so thank you.
And I'll just run through the list of folks here. Mr. Steve Hines, Mr. Chris Klayman, Pat Dalton, Joel Michael, Sean Williams, Nina Manzi, Kathy Schill, Cynthia Templin, and Mr. Cummings, are you here? You're not staff, but you kind of are sometimes. So thank you.
He's a resource.
Our partisan staff, Molly Richardson, Travis Reese, Gary Kay, Allison Robley, Stephen Rubis, and Annika Jensen. Thank you, Annika, for your work in keeping all the papers in front of us. Did I leave anybody out, members? So thank you so much. Let's give them a hand. Okay, members, anything else? Anyone else like to speak on the bill before we do the roll call and final passage? Okay, the motion is that we pass House File 603 to taxes as amended. Okay, and the clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Chair Drazkowski.
Yes.
Representative Hertas.
Yes.
Representative Loeffler.
No.
Representative Anderson. Representative Barr. Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Frankie.
Yes.
Representative Lean.
Aye.
Representative Lunin.
Yes.
Representative Marquardt.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative New.
Yes.
Representative Rarick.
Yes.
Representative Whalen. Representative Joachim.
No.
And Representative Anderson.
Okay, with the ayes being 11 and the noes being 4, the motion passes and the division report is adopted and House File 603 is passed and referred to taxes as amended. Members, thank you. Does anyone else have any parting discussion here before we call it a day? Thank you for all your work, and it's been a pleasure working with all of you this session, and we've got a lot of work ahead of us as we move forward. Members, we may meet again. We don't have anything planned at this point, but in the event we do meet again, we'll let folks know. I would like to look at PILTS sometime, maybe in the interim, and take a close look at that. Maybe expect in the interim we'll have a meeting about payment in lieu of taxes and take a look at just kind of turning that upside down, inside out, and looking at it. And there might be one or two other things, but that's just kind of what I have in mind at this point. But thank you. With